Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers on the broadcast today. Brian Wachta, he's the Senior Vice President of the Retail Association of Nevada, for the whole show on all new Nevada Newsmakers.
All systems check. All right, Sam, let's go check out some D&D roof.
Hey, Ken. From up here, you can really tell the difference a quality D&D roof makes.
You're right, Sam. With our experience, knowledge, and staff, nothing compares to a D&D roof.
Hey, look down there. It's our D&D roofing crew.
I'll bank the plane so we can get a closer look. Sam! You watch your company's bottom line, and I'll cover the top of it.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
Take a look at Pro Group Management and see how your workers' comp requirements can be met head-on. By taking a proactive approach, Pro Group can assure that your company is meeting or exceeding state and federal standards. As you move forward in your industry, Pro Group moves with you, simplifying regulatory tasks, clearing the way so you can get the job done, and look to your future success. Pro Group Management. Workers' comp that works for you.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we're always pleased to welcome back to the program Brian Wachter. He is Senior Vice President of the Retail Association of Nevada. Pleasure to have you back on the program, sir.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
State of the state, what did you like, what did you not like?
Well, I think we saw kind of a grouping of what the governor had been promising over the course of the campaign. I think one of the things we're missing is some of the details, exactly what these programs are going to look like. Minimum wage being one, you know, during the State of the State, didn't mention a dollar figure, but suggested it needed to be increased. The week later, he comes back and says, you know, maybe $12 an hour. There's still so much around that debate that has to take place. So,
what do you think about that? Because, I mean, there are just two solid camps on that. And I think we're seeing more and more automation that are removing jobs for lower paid workers because of this increase in the minimum wage, and that's only going to increase, I believe.
Well, we're definitely going to see a minimum wage increase. For one, there's a ballot question that the legislature can send to the ballot, raising the minimum wage itself. So even without a bill, without legislative action, we're likely to see a minimum wage increase either during session or at least at the ballot. I think really what's going to get into it is, what does that structure look like? Are we going to have conversations about unemployment for 18 to 34 year olds? And some of the communities in Las Vegas, North Las Vegas in particular, unemployment for 18 to 24 year olds is 36%. You know, it gets even higher when you start looking into minority communities. And so those are real things that we have to make sure that we're not pricing them out of the market. And that being said, how quickly are we going to ramp up that increase? For businesses, you know, going from 7 to 12, you know, that's more than a 40% increase in labor costs. And it's not just for those employees that are making that now, but employees that, you know, they were making minimum wage 3 years ago. They've worked hard. They've gotten a raise. Now, you know, they're making minimum wage or the new minimum wage, they're going to expect an increase as well. So we just really need to figure out what those dominoes are going to be so that when we jump into the debate, you know, there aren't a lot of unintended consequences, things were actually thought about And maybe we can alleviate some of the business concerns in different ways.
And at least they're not talking about $15 as a minimum wage.
Well, I would be hesitant to say that they're not. We've heard from Governor Sisolak on 12. We haven't heard from the legislature yet on what they're doing. And some of those members did campaign on $15. So we're not taking anything for granted. We're going to take a look at the whole package.
Okay, other things that came out of the State of the State for you. And let me just briefly say, in addition, I was surprised that Governor Sandoval revealed as much of the budget preparation, which every prior governor has to do because the new governor only has a limited amount of time and can only make a certain amount of changes. But normally you don't give away the State of the State a couple of months before the new governor gets a chance to give the State of the State. I was kind of surprised at that.
Well, I too was a little shocked. It was at least interesting, though, to be able to see the difference in thought process from what Governor Sandoval kind of presented in December versus what Governor Sisolak then presented at the State of the State and then delivered to the legislature last week. There wasn't a heck of a lot of difference, actually, when you got down to it. I think Governor Sisolak did address in his State of the State the specific kind of line items, the Marijuana Compliance Board, the Office for New Americans. Those particular things, of course, weren't in Governor Sandoval's budget, but for the most part, things were aligning fairly closely. In fact, the budget that Governor Sisolak presented was $8.9 billion in spending. The budget that Governor Sandoval developed was $8.8 billion in spending. So they weren't far off in their numbers. So I think we're going to see a continuation of maybe the monetary policy, but I think when we get into program policies, Governor Sisolak has indicated that he might be going away from what Governor Sandoval has set up.
In what directions, for example?
I think education is a big one. Governor Sandoval was very big on creating these categorical block grants for school funding that went directly to a program or purpose-generated issue. Those are not subjected to collective bargaining. Those money has to be spent exactly how the legislature enacted them. The rest of the DSA is not like that. It goes into the distributive school account, and then it gets allocated to the district in one large pot, and then that money gets to go where the school board of trustees directed it. Right now, 87% of that money is in personnel and benefits. So that's where that education money goes. And I think what Governor Sisolak has proposed, which is opening up those categorical funds and putting them back into the DSA, really puts at risk those programs that have actually shown a lot of promise. Zoom schools, the achievement schools, a lot of the push to be able to get specific results was actualized. So Governor Sisolak wants to put that money back in the DSA. I worry about what those programs are going to do.
And I was going to say, what would be the benefit when you're seeing benefits from those specific programs, just putting that money back into that giant pot?
Well, in education, I think what we do so much in Nevada, though, is we compare ourselves constantly to these national report cards and these national reports, and everyone says Nevada spends the least per student that amongst the rest of the nation. We're 51st in funding, and so when you take that look and you move money from those directed programs, and you can pull that out and put it in the DSA, it makes the number or the amount you're spending per student look larger, when in actuality, you're just moving money around. You're not actually spending more money in places that we've proven can increase education results. For instance, lowering class sizes. There's no new money in the governor's budget to lower class sizes. It would take a considerable investment. Instead, we've chosen to increase salaries, which our teachers deserve. But when we look at where education funding needs to go in order to better our student achievement, I think there's a disconnect.
And what do you think is going to be the difference between what the legislature wants and what the governor wants? And with the power of the Democrats going into this session, where's that going to lead?
Oh, I would have to speculate, Sam. I think I fully expect Speaker Frierson to show just the same amount of leadership that he did last session. He got his chamber out and everyone stuck together. I think we're going to see at least an attempt to be working together. I think that's true both sides of the aisle and within the caucuses. Whether that lasts 120 days, I guess we'll all be there to find out.
I was just wondering, Governor Sisolak has positioned himself throughout his career, really, as a moderate Democrat. I would even venture that you know, if he weren't in Clark County, that he would be a Republican. And yet there is, you know, some very liberal elements of both the Senate and the Assembly caucus.
Well, Governor Sisolak had a tremendous amount of help getting elected, and I think some of those base groups are expecting certain liberal agenda items, a $15 an hour minimum wage, to at least be part of that conversation. And so whether or not they incorporate those ideas or not, I think we'll see Governor Sisolak at least attempt to have as much of a conversation around these issues as we can before we have to figure out, you know, is it so far left or in the middle? I just don't see that as too much of a concern.
Okay, and in your conversations with who are now legislators, you know, how has that bubbled up? Because you guys talked to a lot of people, you know, prior to the election.
You know, I think it's even still too soon to look at what the legislature is going to even look like, say, at the end of February. We have, you know, 900 different BDRs that have been released. I think there's about 200 bills that we actually have language on. A lot of these ideas are still conceptual. So until we actually get bill language and we sit down and go, okay, what is the idea? How are we solving this problem? I think it's hard to speculate as to what the legislature is going to look like.
As you look at economic development, I mean, obviously the state is just booming. When you live in Las Vegas, you drive around Las Vegas these days, I mean, you know, the crane is the state bird, and I'm not talking about the bird version of the crane. And it was interesting just the other day that a prominent leader said, you know, we're getting to the point where we're running out of room space. Meaning that we need more hotel rooms. And there are more hotel rooms coming online in the next couple of years, but it indicated to me that they were talking even beyond what's currently being built. So where do you think that this governor and this legislature is going to go as far as economic development when you see how much was done under Governor Sandoval?
Well, I think it would be a perfect opportunity to take a step back maybe from the amount, how active our economic development efforts have been, and there's no question as to whether or not we have results. We have massive national, multinational corporations that are now doing significant business in Nevada. We're slowly diversifying the economy. But every single one of these have cost long-term investment in terms of tax abatements, in terms of credits, and that has a significant impact on the budget in terms of, you know, we raise probably more like $9 billion in spending, but we abate and we credit so many of our taxes back to some of these businesses that we lose out on that growth. And so when you don't have property tax or sales tax being paid, you lose out then on those communities that are supporting and raising the level of you know, workers that you need to be able to provide to these businesses. And so you end up with a situation where it's time to pull back. Let's see what the long-term benefit can be. How are these situations growing? How have they coming into their own? How is it when, and we haven't seen this yet, the transition from when a company goes from having those abatements and those credits to not having the abatements and credits? Is there a long-term strategy that they're still here? And so I think all those questions are unanswered, so now would be a perfect time to take a step back.
But it's interesting because you look at you know, a company like Tesla, for example, and Panasonic with their joint project in Northern Nevada. I would be shocked to think that they could replicate what they have in terms of, you know, building and land and costs in another state. You know, the cost of moving would you know, it seemed to me that would be a very difficult thing to accomplish.
I agree, and I don't mean to suggest that they're going to leave, but that's a part of the economic plan that we haven't seen happen yet. It's a stage that's coming due. Some of the Tesla tax credits do go away here in the next few years, and so I think it's something to look and watch.
Interesting. Nobody else has raised that issue before because, you know, it takes time to even get these companies here. I mean, redevelopment is a 20 to 30 year project, and so when you finally got the businesses here, your immediate thought is not, well, gee, what do we do when, you know, the abatements go away? But you raise a good issue. Let's take a break. More with Brian Wachter when we come back.
Tamarack Junction is South Reno's hotspot with over 450 of the latest slots and video games. Sully's Sports Bar, the Dining Car Restaurant, William Hill Sportsbook, and the Tamarack Steakhouse and Lounge. We're just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia. Yeah.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Hi, I'm Eric Robnett, owner of Home Energy Experts. Has this ever happened to you?
Honey, did you remember to turn down the thermostat?
Forgetting to set the temperature? Not fun. We can help. Our new smart thermostat keeps the temperature set for your comfort all by itself.
I'm feeling hot now.
To increase your comfort, go to homeenergyexperts.com for details. That's homeenergyexperts.com.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
The Tamarack Junction Steakhouse is known for signature steaks, handcrafted cocktails, and world-class wines. Join us Thursdays and Friday nights from 4:30 to 6:30 in the Steakhouse Lounge for live music, gourmet plates, and well-priced wines just north of the Summit Mall on South Virginia.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Brian Wachter. He's the Senior Vice President of Retail Association of Nevada. And we're going to be taking a look over the next couple of weeks of, you know, what potential things could come out of this legislative session. One of the things that has been just stifling local government for a long time now is the property tax situation, where we're stuck with, and it's actually unconstitutional, although nobody will ever do anything about it because it would raise everybody's property taxes up to 8% if we were to equalize that. But you have 3% at 8% regarding residential versus business, but it's in such a way that it's been stifling the ability of local governments to be able to raise the monies that they need. Do you see something happening in this session that could affect that?
You know, I don't know if we'll see anything more than the ballot question that is working its way through the legislature. It's something that certainly deserves to be discussed.
Is it too red hot for the legislature to really take on?
I think that you're going to have a hard time convincing the public that it's something that really needs to be done for long-term stability. Those of us who look at funding those local governments and where that money comes from, all we see is a shift from property tax revenue to licensing fees or inspection fees or any number of things that we have to pay local government for, that if they're not receiving their money from different revenue, they start looking at us. And we've seen that over the last 5 years, sometimes, you know, 1,000% increases in certain fees. The Board of Agriculture is doing, just finished doing a raise in their weights and measures scales. And so anytime you have those kinds of programs, that money is just being rewired. And so I think it's better to look at the property tax itself. How do we get that revenue to be a little bit more stable, less valleys, less peaks, so that we can use that and we stop kind of nickel diming businesses to death.
But do you see an increase in the property tax? Certainly on the residential level.
Well, I think business with just the increase on just business, I'm not sure you're going to actually be able to raise the revenue that you would need in order to fund local government. Because while businesses are more large, you know, kind of one ticket items, there are many more residents in Clark County, for instance, and so that's where the bulk of those fees are going to come from.
And you raise another interesting question, which is, you know, are we seeing the reality now? Because it's taken a long time for this to happen, of Southern Nevada taking over the legislature as the population base has increased. And they didn't really use their clout for a long, long time. And a lot of people would go back and say, well, that was Senator Raggio and Senator Townsend and others who were able to maintain the strength of the North because they had that political power. But that has all changed now. So do you see the North-South split widening? Or do you see a legislature full of potential statesmen?
Well, I'm not sure in the legislative building this north-south debate is as prevalent as perhaps others like to kind of narrate that it is. I mean, you have legislators from the South that know these specific issues. These are Southern issues. These are Nevada issues. And you have legislators from the North. But the legislature itself, I think since we haven't had, you know, the Bill Raggios and some of the world, we haven't had this northern fence kind of, where it was like, no, we're going to protect northern Nevada at all costs, including, you know, to the detriment of Clark County. I don't see that conversation as currently taking place. So it's always going to be a struggle for money. That's what the legislature does. But you are seeing most of the leadership, most of members being from the South, and there's no reason to suggest that that's not going to continue to be even more of a problem going forward.
We've seen the amount of money that the state is supposed to be able to spend, but we're seeing numbers rising above that you know, the Economic Forum gave a number that they based the budget on, and they'll come back again in May with another number. It seems like we're already ramping up to spend all that new money that we don't even know if it's there or not.
Right, so the Economic Forum in December came out and said had about an extra $700 million in additional revenue that we could expect over the next two-year period. Economic Forum then took the total revenue, $8.8 billion. Governor Sisolak's budget is about $8.9 billion. He's getting the additional revenue in two places. One, instead of distributing 100% of the GST to the highway fund, he's going to take 25% of that, which is currently being done, and redirected into the general fund. And then the second was a planned decrease in the modified business tax rate, which was a conversation that the business community had had with the legislature, that if the brand new commerce tax outperformed itself or more than 4%, that there would be a deduction in the payroll tax. Governor Sisolak is proposing that deduction doesn't go forward. So that's how he's balancing the budget.
And how does retail feel about that?
Exhausted. I mean, quite frankly, it was a legislative commitment that was made. I certainly don't think we can hold Governor Sisolak accountable for wanting to say, oh, the rate's going to stay the same and we're going to use the extra revenue. But it was a promise made by the legislature to the business community, and so it kind of hurts a little bit that that's not even going to be discussed going forward, especially given that the legislature is going to look at, you know, massive increases to businesses, not just in, you know, minimum wage and workers' comp and paid sick leave, but the totality of all of it is going to be far worse than any tax increase could be.
All right, let's take a break. More with Brian Wachter after that comment, after this.
Dimitri Prine here for Design Outdoor. At Design Outdoor, we specialize in all hardscapes, pavers, and walls you'll need for everything, from wonderful small yards to full-blown outdoor living. And we only refer the best contractors to make your vision a reality. Our store and backyard are located at 11600 South Virginia, just north of DeMonte Ranch Parkway. Visit designoutdoor.com or call us at 851-9499.
I'm men's rights attorney Marilyn York, and because I represent men in all family law matters, women often call me gender traitor, woman hater, and even disgusting. So why represent men and target myself with these offensive monikers? It's simple. Children with fathers in their lives are 6 times less likely to drop out of school, 15 times less likely to go to prison, and 5 times less likely to commit suicide. So ladies, you can hate me, but please love your children more than you hate their fathers.
Hi, I'm Dave Newman. Remember me? I used to be the house detective, and now I'm a realtor, full-time at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates. And a lot of people ask me, how's the market? You know what? It's fantastic. If you're even kicking around the idea of buying or selling, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Call me at RE/MAX Realty Affiliates and just ask for the guy who used to be the house detective, Dave Newman.
Everyone is talking about opioids, but they're not the only drugs that can be harmful if taken in large quantities or not as prescribed. You also need to be aware of side effects from anxiety drugs, muscle relaxants, sleep aids, and stimulants. Mixing prescription drugs with other drugs or alcohol can be dangerous. If you take an Ambien with a glass of wine, it may be enough to stop you from breathing. Prescribed drugs can be just as dangerous as illegal drugs. Take medications only as directed.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Brian Wachter. He's the Senior Vice President of the Retail Association in Nevada. Marijuana, how does that play into Retail Association, and how is that doing as far as income for the state?
Well, as far as income for the state, it's exceeded expectations on those who projected it. I think we're seeing marijuana as an industry really kind of grow into its own. It's hard to think of it as in its infancy, but it certainly is. We're very encouraged by Governor Sisolak's Marijuana Compliance Board. I think having the gold standard in Nevada is the correct way to do it, and it's also what the state does, and we do it really well, which is regulate privileged business license. And so I think Nevada is geared to lead the nation in this, and so I think we're excited to be a part of it.
It's going to be interesting now that he's County Commissioner Tick Sagebloom to see where these marijuana lounges come into play. The casinos were not happy when the gentlemen's clubs took $30 million a year away from their properties because people were leaving hotel casinos to go to gentlemen's clubs. I can't see them being happy, but I don't see that they have any choices until federal law has changed.
Well, that's just it. Without federal law, I doubt you're going to see a gaming property get involved. But I think Commissioner Sagebloom is probably on the right track. There's a lot of pot being sold, especially in Clark County. And if you're a tourist, there's no legal way for you to consume that product. And so the question begs, where are you doing it at?
But you know, when we got the no smoking ban, we had a situation where you had gaming properties next to another property that they owned, where you could smoke in one, but you could gamble in the other. And, you know, I wonder if somebody's going to be clever enough to come up with, maybe not a major hotel casino, but some of the smaller properties come up with something like that.
Well, I think we can expect the market to be able to give us something that we haven't even thought of yet. I think it's all about letting government set that framework and then letting the industry itself respond to consumer demand, and let's see what we get.
That's where we got to leave it. Always a pleasure, sir. See you in Carson City.
Thanks, Sam.
And we'll be right back.
A bird's eye captures its surroundings at different heights. At Brian Culpa Photography, we can make your imagination soar over buildings, parks, cityscapes, and beyond. Brian's images tell the story and get the job done. If you need a new perspective to tell your story, contact Brian today. Brian Culpa Photography. Experience the bird's eye view at brianculpaphotography.com.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion, for romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in Northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Pro Group Management is the place where companies can find workers' comp solutions that are designed to meet their specific business requirements. As regulations evolve, Pro Group takes a proactive approach to clear the path to make sure your business stays ahead of the curve. Knowing your workers' comp program is optimized, you can focus on other important matters related to your growing business. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you.
On our next broadcast, it's an all-pundit show with Don Tatro, Mike Draper, and Mylon Hawkins. We'll see you then.